Welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Watch us live every Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:05 a.m. at gosblive.com. Or visit us in person. You can find directions at gostonebridge.com. Connect with us on our social media at facebook.com/gostonebridge and our Instagram at sbchurch.
Man, that is a great video, isn't it?
And there's something true about that. We can look out everywhere and we see these life hacks for happiness. And this is actually what led Steve and I to a conversation. He called me in and he said, John, I want to talk about the pursuit of happiness. He said, but I want to talk about the fact that the gospel is not aimed at happiness, but the fruit of it sure is joy. And I said, Steve, I love this idea. How can I help? And he said, I want you to teach the first series and I want you to talk about love. And my face kind of dropped in that moment because the truth is love is a really broad topic. It's like saying, talk about something. And I just struggled, in all honesty, because I sat there and I said, Steve, I don't get it, because in 1 John chapter 4, when God is described in one word, the author John chooses the word love. And that's phenomenal, and that's deep, and there's a lot of richness in that. But it's also just really big. And when Jesus is asked, he says, Jesus, what is the one rule that kind of summarizes all of your rules? Jesus says, love the Lord with all your heart, your mind, and your body, and love your neighbor as yourself. And that's profound, and that is at the center of Christianity, but it's so large, it's so grand, that it's hard to actually describe. It's like saying, I want you to teach on the color blue. And then I said, and Steve, the Apostle Paul, when there's fighting in the church, he writes to the early church, and they're fighting over who's better and what gift is best, and Paul says, if you don't have love, you've missed it. You've missed the whole thing. And that's great, and that's a huge tool. But it's so big, I don't know how to approach this. And Steve, much wiser than me, he said, we have a verse that's going to help you out. And I'll get to that verse in one moment, but I want to start with this question. It's a question that caused me to think a little bit, because the question is really simple. It's, are you happy with the way you love? Are you happy with the way you love? You see, the truth is, I would answer this question differently any given day, and maybe differently any time during the day. There are times where I say the right word or I give the right gift, and I'm like, that was a home run. I see their face slide up, and I'm like, man, I am really good at this love thing. And then if I'm honest, there are times where I think I'm really good at this love thing. I just think that you're really bad at receiving it, right? Like, no, you don't get it, hun. I'm excellent here. But there are also days where I just miss it. And the day that caused me to think about this question was a day where I just missed it. You see, a couple weeks ago, we had a three-day weekend, and I love three-day weekends. I love them because my kids are home, and they don't want to be at school. And my wife is home because she works at a school, and she doesn't want to be at school. And this is great for me because everyone's in a great attitude, and they're having fun. And better yet, because one of us is home, the house is cleaner. And even better yet, because my wife beats me home on those days, she cooks. And it's way better than what I make. So this three-day weekend, I'm stoked. I'm so excited that I'm going to head home after a long day of work to meet my happy wife with my happy kids in a clean house with delicious food. This is what life should be. And the reality is, in that moment, I even called her at 10. Hey, do you need me to do anything? Are you good? Yeah, I'm having a great day. Love you. See you later. I called around 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Hey, just one more time. Do you need me to pick up anything from the grocery store? Or are we good? Yep, I got everything taken care of. Don't worry about it. So I get in the car, and again, I'm heading home to a wonderful night with my family. Everything's going to be great. And some point between my 2 o'clock call and me walking in the door, apparently everything broke loose in our house. You see, I walk in the door, and my kids are like in a screaming match at each other. Like, they are just aggravated beyond anything I've ever seen, and they are at each other. And I walk in, and I'm seeing this, and my house is an utter wreck, right? It was supposed to be clean. But it's way dirtier than when I left it that morning. And then I look over, and the kitchen is somewhat clean because there's no food happening. And I'm a little disappointed by that. And then I say, where's your mom? And then I see my beautiful wife, and she's sitting at the dining table just with her head down like this, her hands over her head, and I say, hey, what's going on? And I can just see it in her face. She's done. Now, I was exhausted from work, but God is really good, and he filled me with more grace than I deserve in that moment, and I rallied myself, and I rallied my family, and we made dinner. And then we cleaned the house. And then I got to do what every husband looks forward to when he gets home, really when he wakes up in the morning. He sits down on the couch and goes, I'm finished. You know, I exhaled the day away. And that was the moment I realized it was a 3-day weekend, and it wasn't Sunday. And my son has tumbling Mondays. And I had a quick panic attack, and then I remembered, it's my wife's turn. So I breathed out again and settled into the couch. And this was the moment my wife started the dreaded words that no husband wants to hear. Honey, can you? And in that moment, I was done. I did not love my wife well. I would love to say that I was just a little rude or this, but I really dropped the ball. And the truth of the matter is for us is that oftentimes if we're asked if we're happy with the way we love, we may say no, but we don't know how to move forward. We really don't know how to love better. And this is where Steve's verse came in, and Steve pointed me towards this, and he said, John, this is going to help you. And I'm really thankful he did. You see, he points towards John 13, 34, and here's what the verse says. A new commandment I give to you, to love one another even as I have loved you. So you must love one another. You see, the truth is the whole conversation today, the whole element of happiness that we're going to talk about today is centered around loving like Jesus. And the truth is, and you're going to hear me come back to this at the end, love is really good and it makes you happy. So even when it's done poorly, even if it's like 10%, we tend to celebrate it. But if we want to love in a way that really gives us an abundance of joy, an abundance of health, then we need to love like Jesus. So all I want to do today is something really simple. I want to walk through a story in the Gospel of John and make a few observations about the way that Jesus is responding to this woman. I want to give us one habit that we can try, a challenge for this week. And then after that, I want to quickly just look at what Jesus' view of love is as he goes through the story. So if you want to turn there, you have your phone, we're in John chapter 4. Otherwise, the words will be on the screen. Here's what you need to know. This is early on in Jesus' ministry. He has gathered his disciples. He's been baptized by John, and he is now going out and teaching and baptizing, and things are blowing up quick. So soon, word gets out that Jesus and his disciples are out baptizing John and his disciples. And Jesus gets word that the Pharisees have heard of this, and he decides he's not dealing with that. So Jesus says, we're leaving Judea, I'm going home to Galilee. And in order to get to Galilee, he had to cross through a land called Samaria. And this is where our story picks up. So this is John chapter 4, verse 5. Eventually he came to the land of Samaria, a Samaritan village called Sychar, near the field that Jacob gave his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. And Jesus, tired from a long walk, sat wearily down at the well around noontime. Now, this is a big thing because we hear the word weary, and this doesn't begin to describe weary. You see, the Bible set there says noontime. What it's really saying is around the sixth hour, which would put it between 12 and 1, or halfway through the kind of daylight time in the Middle East. And this is important because Jesus was walking. He was walking from Judea to Samaria, and then from Samaria all the way home to Galilee. The average person at this time could walk 24 to 26 miles a day. Yeah, and that's not on the woodlands like bike paths or Magnolia or Conroe roads, right? That's not even the flats of Texas. This is like nasty wilderness. And when they say Roman roads, what they really mean is like dirt paths. So what he has was dirt paths that weaved in and out, left and right, up and down through valleys and crags and mountains and everything. And he makes it at this point between 12 and 13 miles. And he sits down beside the well, and you can imagine him, much like me, just going, my disciples are gone for an hour. You know, this is me. I have the house to myself. Just that moment. And the truth of the matter is, the hardest opportunities to love come at the most inopportune times. You see, the setup for us right here is the same setup that I had. It is me at my worst, and it's supposed to be Jesus at his worst. He's exhausted, he's hungry, he's thirsty, and he finally gets a moment to breathe, and this is where life is interrupted. So let's jump into the story and actually see what's going on here and how Jesus responds to this woman. Soon a Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, please give me a drink. He was alone at the time because his disciples had gone to the village to buy some food. And the woman was surprised, for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. She said to Jesus, you are a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink? If you've grown up in the church world, you're gonna have heard that Samaritans and the Jewish people did not get along. The Samaritans wanted to be part of the Jewish family, but they were seen more as imitators. In fact, they were incredibly offensive. Today, we may even associate them with like cultural appropriation, right? This was the idea, is they dressed, they looked, they acted, they did everything they could to appear Jewish. And the Jewish people completely exorcised themselves from them because of that. They excommunicated themselves. And so this woman immediately points this out. This is a hostile comment. Hey, you're Jewish, I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you talking to me? This is not gentle. And she's directly pointing to her identity as someone who is other, who is in a different tribe than Jesus. And this is going to be central to Jesus' conversation with her. But for this moment, I want us to understand this. As followers of Christ, as believers, we don't turn love off. Love loves the unlovable. Love loves the unlovable. You see, we don't get to choose who we love or when we love. Love comes at its own pace and life interrupts us. The challenge for us is to have it turned on, ready to go. And in this moment, this woman pushes hard. I'm Samaritan. Why are you talking to me? And Jesus' response, as we're going to see, is gentle and kind. It does not return aggression with aggression. So Jesus replied, if only you knew the gift God had for you and who you are speaking to, but you would ask me and I would give you living water. We'll pause for one moment. Living water has a lot of theological context to it. In this moment, if we were going to really translate this fairly, it's running water. He says, I have running water. And if you knew who I was, you wouldn't be asking why I talked to you. You would have been jumping the line to break the social barrier and talk to me. So he meets her gently here in this moment, but let's keep going. But sir, you don't have a rope or a bucket. She says, and this well is very deep. Where would you get this living water? And beside, do you think you're greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us this well? How can you offer better water than he and his sons and his animals employed or enjoyed? So there were two kind of wells in the Middle East at this time, and what she's pointing to is Jacob's well here. Jacob's well was actually just a deep hole in the ground. This was the vast majority of wells. You see, what you did is the Middle East didn't get a lot of rainfall, and the Holy Land hardly had any rainfall. So they would dig a really deep hole in the ground, and then they would let it fill with rainwater, and because it was cooler and because the sun didn't hit it as much, it would store the water. And hopefully, it would store enough water for the next time it rained. And if it didn't, villages died. So this well has done a great job so far. It has stored water since the time of Jacob. And she says, how can you have a better well than what I have? Because Jesus is already saying he's a well of running water. And this was the second kind of well. It was one that was very rare in the Middle East. It was when you dug down to make the first kind of well, but when you got to the bottom, lo and behold, you hit an aquifer or you hit a stream underground. And you were like, well, that problem solved itself. This well never goes dry. The water is always fresh and new and clean. And so she asked right away, if you're saying you have this living water well, how is it that you can do this better than Jacob? Now, this isn't as hostile anymore because Jesus has responded to hostility with gentleness. And what I want us to catch in this moment is that if we're meeting people in their sin, it's going to get messy, but we have to invite them forward because love invites. It does not force its own way. So when she's hostile, she's really sticking her toe in the water. She's saying in that moment, hey, we're not supposed to talk. I don't know if I can trust you. Are you going to bite me? And then when he doesn't bite, she puts her foot in. Now let's see what happens right after Jesus makes this comment, because this next verse is going to be the core of our conversation. Jesus replied, anyone who drinks this water soon becomes thirsty again. But those who drink the water I give will never be thirsty again. It becomes a fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life. Now, I love this verse because when I first read it and I was a kid, I read it and here's what I thought. I thought it was like this magic water bottle right? To where he's like, Jesus is the living water who I will never thirst again with. Meaning that if I just go to Jesus like he's a water bottle, I'm like, Jesus, I need help. I can toss the water bottle and I never thirst again. And the reality is here's what happened as I began to experience this verse is I would take my sip of Jesus in this water bottle, and then like a camel, I would try to store my relationship with God and move forward through life and get beaten and tired and thirsty to make it to next Sunday. And this is what we typically do, unfortunately, right? As we come in and we're like, I need to be fed, I need some Jesus today, and like camels, we store it in us to make it to the next week. But this isn't really what this verse is saying. He's not saying you won't thirst again, you don't need to come back. He's saying, I'm a well that never runs dry. You see, that word drink there isn't what I thought it was. It doesn't mean that I take a drink. It's actually what's called an infinitive, which is a really fancy way of saying it's an ongoing verb. So what he's really saying is that Jesus is on tap. The water is running. Hey, you're not going to go thirsty because every time you get thirsty, you have tap water at home. Go fill up your cup. And the beauty of this moment is what he's really saying is I want you to come and I want you to drink. And then I want you to go. And when you get exhausted, I want you to drink. And then next time before you get exhausted, I want you to drink. And we could stop right here because this is our habit for the day. This is the big thing that I want us to understand, that if we want to love in a way that really gives abundance of joy in life, we need to be filled with the living water. So there's a really easy habit for us. I want to challenge you to choose two times a day for the next week. Two times a day that you will stop what you're doing and just quickly, Lord, give me patience in this moment. Lord, help me love well in this moment. Lord, keep me from losing anger in this moment. I guess you don't want to lose anger, do you? Lord, keep me from being overly angry in this moment. But the truth in this is that when I walk through my week, there are moments in my week where I don't love well. Right, so maybe your moment is Monday morning. Maybe you've enjoyed your weekend and you're like looking at work ahead of you and you go, I got five more days of this and all I wanna do is be done. And then you walk into the parking lot, like you get out of your car and then you just feel the weight of your work week. Maybe that's a moment that you need to get a drink from Jesus. Honestly, maybe it's Friday night. Maybe you've worked your tail off all week and you're expecting really good food and really well-behaved kids and a really happy spouse and a clean house and you get home and everything has broken loose and you're like, John, that's my every Friday night. Maybe on the way home you take a sip from the living water. You see, the truth is we respond in, how do I say this? We respond in retrospect. We wait for something to go wrong before we drink from the well. But the challenge from Jesus is, can we build a habit of continual drinking? And so that's my habit for you today. That's the challenge I have for you. Twice a day, try to drink from the living water. Just really quick, short prayers, but turn your attention to Jesus. But I don't want to stop there. See, the story goes on. I think there's a lot we can learn from love in this story. So let's keep going. Please, sir, the woman said, give me this water, then I'll never thirst again. And I won't have to come get the water. You see, the truth is in this moment, that woman heard exactly what I heard. If I get the living water, I won't have to ever come back to the well. I'll never be thirsty again. And the reality is when she reaches out in this moment, what she's really doing is she's responding to the invitation of Christ, even if she doesn't understand it fully. And this is great for us because we're going to say this, love searches for a response. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that love forces its own way, but rather that we actively wait. Because if I'm going to love someone well, they set the pace at which we can move. And in this moment, this woman is setting the pace, and Jesus is responding in kind with invitation after invitation after invitation. But when she says this, she's done sticking her toe in the water. She's ready to jump in. So when she's ready to jump in, let's look at how Jesus shifts this conversation. Go and get your husband, Jesus told her. I don't have a husband, the woman replied. Jesus said, you're right, you don't have a husband. You've had five husbands. And the one you're married to, or the one you're living with now, you're not even married to. You certainly spoke the truth. You see, the reality is that the moment she said, I want what you have, Jesus said, guess what? We're gonna start moving somewhere. And so here's the truth of this woman. Some commentaries will say she was a prostitute. We don't know. She was married 5 times. It could have been divorce, or it could have been death or death. But the reality of this situation is this woman was in pain. And she was ostracized by her community. She was an outcast. This is why she was there at noon. And so reaching out in pain, ostracized by her community, she lashes out, right? And she says, "Why are you talking to me?" And Jesus doesn't lash out back. And he says, "Well, if you knew who I was, if you knew what I had for you, you would have broken the taboo and come and spoken." And so she says, "Tell me about this that's so good," right? Like this water. "What do you have?" And so he tells her, "I have something you don't have, something that will make your life infinitely better." And the moment she says, "I want it," Jesus is ready to deal with where she's at in life. And this is it. Love meets us where we're at. You see, the truth of the matter is a lot of times when I feel lovely, I'm ready to be loved. But when I feel unlovely, I don't really feel like I'm deserving of love. But the love of Christ meets us in our mess. So Jesus didn't go, "Well, go leave the guy you're living with, figure out what in the world went wrong with your past relationships, and when you get your life together, come find me." Right? He met her in the mess of her life. Now hold on to that thought, because we're going to add to it. "Sir," the woman said, "you must be a prophet. So tell me, why is it that the Jews insist that Jerusalem is the only place to worship, while we Samaritans worship on Mount Gerizim, where our ancestors worshiped?" Now this is actually the most hostile comment she makes. She's going right to the heart of her frustration up front. You see, when she said, "I'm Samaritan, why are you talking to me?" One of the core things in this was the Samaritans were not allowed to worship in the temple. I mean, to be honest, this is a little unbelievable from a modern mindset. Can you imagine somebody wanting to worship in the church and us saying, "No, go build your own church"? How much this must have hurt her. And so she says, "Look, you tell me I'm supposed to worship in Jerusalem at the temple, but you won't let me, so I worship here in Gerizim. So what is it? Where am I supposed to worship?" And Jesus replied, "Believe me, dear woman, the time is coming when it will no longer matter where you worship the Father, on this mountain or in Jerusalem. You Samaritans know very little about the one you worship, while we Jews know all about him, for salvation has come through the Jews." I love this response, and we'll keep going in the passage in just a moment, but he had a great opportunity in that moment to say, "Yep, you should be in Jerusalem. Nah, that stinks." But he doesn't do that. So let's unpack what he's doing here in just a moment, but let's finish this section because there's a lot more. "But the time is coming," he says. "Indeed, it's here now, when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. The Father is looking for those who will worship him that way. For God is spirit, so those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth." You see, he had the perfect opportunity to go, "Yep, Jerusalem, that is really the place you're supposed to worship. Sorry about that." But he didn't. Instead, he actually pushed her towards a much holier, much better answer. It's not about where you worship. It's about the heart with which you worship. And as believers, this can be a challenging thing for us. And here's what I mean by that. I absolutely love football. I grew up playing it. I love watching it. It's something I share with my dad. I love watching games with him in general. My son does not like football. You see, I really want to share the things I love with the people I love. But the people I love don't always love what I love. So my son, he likes tumbling, gymnastics, and he likes pirates. Yeah, I don't know what to do with that. But when I hang out with him, I don't make him watch football with me. He'll dress like a pirate, and we will play pirates. Because the truth is, if I love him well, I want him to be uniquely him. But if I try to conform him to who I am, it will destroy our relationship. And in this moment, Jesus had the ability to try to force her toward something she couldn't live up to. And instead, he chooses to transform her, to push her toward something more. So I want us to catch this. Love transforms. Love transforms. Now, with that in mind, I want to put together the idea that Jesus meets us where we're at, that love meets us where we're at, with the idea that love transforms. Because there is this cultural idiom today, this kind of comment you're going to hear over and over and over, and it goes like this. If you love me, you'll accept me as I am. Now, I want to pause on that. That is 100% biblically true. 100% biblically true, because love meets us where we're at. But if I love someone, I don't want them to stay where they're at. You see, my son is 11, my daughter is 8. And they act like an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, right? My son likes pirates and dresses like a pirate. If my son is 41 and my daughter is 38 and they act like an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, I haven't done a good job loving them. Love wants us to grow and transform. So while love meets us where we're at, it will constantly invite us towards something more. Now, with that said, let's see how the woman responds to this, because again, she's given the most hostile challenge possible, and Jesus has met it with gentleness. So here we go. The woman said, "I know the Messiah is coming, the one who's called the Christ. And when he comes, he will explain everything to us." And then Jesus told her, "I am the Messiah." This is where our story is going to end today, and we'll jump one more place. But here's what I want us to catch in this moment. You see, the truth of the matter is that she was right on the verge, right? She took a step and Jesus was gentle, and she took a step and Jesus was gentle. And then she says, "I want what you have to offer." And he begins at that moment to call her to stop living in pain and sin and hurt and begin to be transformed into a fullness of life. But she still didn't quite get it, right? One day the Messiah is coming. And Jesus in that moment goes, "I'm not content to leave you partially healthy." You see, love calls us to an abundance of health. And so here's how I want us to understand this, or to unpack this idea. I've worked as a personal trainer on and off for years. And every once in a while, I have someone come in who would have some kind of mobility issue, right? Like maybe their shoulders hurt, their hip, their knee. And this particular guy, he comes in. He was a really great guy. He said, "John, I was wondering if you would work with me. I spoke to my doctor, and they said that if I don't start training my shoulder, I'm going to need surgery." Now, I'll be honest. I had never done this kind of work before, and I have no idea why he chose me. I'm completely unqualified. But I'm like, "I'm a large guy, so apparently you think I know what I'm doing. Great." So I say, "Sure, I'll help you, but let's do an assessment. Let's see where you're at." And day one, we do an assessment, and he walks in, and he can lift his arm to here without pain. And then you can see the face cringe as he gets his arm up to parallel, and then he can't move it past there. He lowers his arm, and we begin training. We begin training with body weight, right? So we have him doing things like this. Anything I can do just to get that muscle to begin to respond and grow. And after 6 months of training, we were up to like 5 pounds. But he had worked his tail off twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday for 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, we did an assessment. And I said, "All right, let's see how you're doing. I want to see what our real progress is, because I've definitely noticed your mobility has gotten better." And he took his arm and he raised it to parallel without any pain, about as happy as you could see him. And then with a little bit of pain, he went, "Mm." And he reached overhead and you could see that little tiny scowl right there. Whew. And he put it down. And I said, "Man, I'm so excited for you. 6 months we've been working at getting you healthy, past 10% mobility to fully mobile, and we've done so much. I want you to go celebrate this weekend, and I'm gonna see you next Tuesday, and we're gonna get you to full mobility." Tuesday rolled around, and I didn't see him. Friday rolled around, I didn't see him. The following Tuesday and the following Friday, I still didn't see him, and now he's missed 2 full weeks. He'd missed one day in the 6 months before. So I call him up on Monday of week 3, trying to get ahead of Tuesday. And I said, "Hey, I just want to check on you, make sure you're okay. I haven't seen you in 2 weeks now, and we've made so much progress." And he said, "John, man, I love you. Thank you so much for checking on me, but you know, I'm good." He said, "You know, the pain is manageable. The pain is manageable." I didn't see him the following week or ever again. The reality is that when we're hurting badly, we cry out for help. But the moment our life gets manageable, we lose the habits that would ever get it to thriving. And this is a deep challenge to us, because the gospel's not content with manageable. The gospel pushes us towards an abundance of health. And we do that simply. We do that by continually putting Jesus on tap in our life and taking advantage of that, rather than storing water like a camel and waiting till we're exhausted and dehydrated and then trying to sprint to the nearest watering hole. So there's one last passage I want to look at today with you guys. And this passage is actually Matthew 27. Because we're going to talk about the love of Jesus. It is completely displayed on the cross. You see, in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus' last words, which is, "It is done," are not there. In fact, they're actually described almost as just a scream of pain. So if you're interested in it, you can see it later in the chapter. But for right now, his last actual recorded words are this. At about 3 o'clock, Jesus called out. And in a loud voice, he yelled out, "Eli, Eli, lema shakabanai," which means, my God, why have you abandoned me?" Now, this is a big deal to us because I want to pause on this. On the cross, Jesus takes the fullness of my sin, meaning he takes everything I've done wrong upon himself. He's taken not just what I've done wrong, but everyone who sinned against me, all the pain I felt, he took that upon the cross. So he sees me at my utter worst, both in my responses and what I've harmed others with. And he sees all of that, and his response is to yell out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And right now you're saying, "John, why are you telling me this? This sounds horrible." But this verse is not what we think it is. You see, there's a reason it gives you the Hebrew and then it gives you the English right there. And that's because the way you cite something at this time is not by author or by title, it's by the first verse of the song. And Jesus is quoting a song. And not just any song, he's quoting Psalm 22. And here's what you need to know about Psalm 22. Psalm 22 is messianic, which is a really nice way of saying this, that Jesus is saying in that moment, "I'm the Messiah." So I want to rephrase the way we understand, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Because he's not saying, "God, where are you?" What he's really saying in that moment is in your worst, in our absolute failings, I love you and I'm here for you. Cast your sin upon me. You see, the truth is this, the love of Christ overcomes our worst. And I told you up front that a lot of times we find it hard to love others when we believe we're unlovely. But Jesus has seen us at our worst. And at our worst, he still says, "Cast it on me, I got you." And he calls us to our best. You see, there's one final part of Psalm 22 that I want to point out, and the verse won't pop up, but I just want you to hear this. If you're struggling with this idea, right, where the enemy, where Satan comes at you and he tells you, "You're unlovable. If only people knew who you really were." Psalm 22 is a great psalm for us. Because not only does Jesus say, "I got you, cast it on me," but Psalm 22 actually has a verse in it where God promises us he will never turn his back on us. So in this moment, we see the steadfast, enduring, relentless love of Christ for us, even at our worst. And I want to encourage you today that if you ever fall into that trap, you remember Jesus' words were words for you. And that his love is a love that does not love us at our best alone, but loves us regardless of where we're at. And if we're going to love like Jesus, we have to tap into who Jesus is. Now, there's one last thing I want to do today, because if we're going to talk about the cross and we're going to talk about the love of Christ, we want to participate in Jesus. That's what it's all about. So in Matthew 26, Jesus instigates what's called the Lord's Supper. This is right before he goes to the cross, and he takes his disciples, and if you would like to, you can grab this. If you're at home, you can grab something to eat and drink. But Jesus sits with his disciples around a table. And in that moment, he takes bread and he breaks the bread. And then he says, "This is my body, broken for you." Today, we're about to participate and we're about to eat the bread of life together. But I want you to remember that this was broken for us, not because we're lovable, not because God just sees us at our best, but because he overcame us at our worst. And he calls us to something more. So eat this in remembrance of Christ, because he died for our sins. Now after that, Jesus took wine in a glass. And he said, "This is my blood, spilled on your behalf. Drink this in remembrance of me." Today, I want you to remember that the death of Jesus is the catalyst for all the love we have. And that if you run dry, if you run broken, if you run empty, the solution is actually really simple. If you want more than 10% happiness from love, you got to lean into who Jesus is. So take those moments in your week. Pray and ask God to fill you because you are loved, even at your worst. Pray with me. Father, I ask you right now to meet us where we're at. I ask you to remind us, Father, of who you are, even when we forget. I ask you to come into this place and call us towards holiness and remind us that we are loved. I ask you that you would fill us with your love so that we may know not only your love, but that we may make our neighbors and our family members recognize who you are. I ask that you fill us with your presence so that we can go out into this week and love well. And I ask that you build the habits in us, Father, to get us to a full joy in that love. In Jesus' name, amen.